Hello, iterative marketers. Welcome to the Iterative Marketing Podcast, where each week we give marketers and entrepreneurs actionable ideas, techniques, and examples to improve your marketing results. If you want notes and links to the resources discussed on the show, sign up to get them emailed to you each week at iterativemarketing.net. There you'll also find the Iterative Marketing blog and our community LinkedIn group where you can share ideas and ask questions of your fellow iterative marketers. Now let's dive into the show. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Iterative Marketing Podcast. I'm your host, Steve Robinson, and with me, as always, is the inquisitive and yet authoritative Elizabeth Aaron. How are you doing today, Elizabeth?
I'm good. How are you, Steve?
I'm doing very well. I saw a TV commercial recently that I just really, really loved, and I've been wanting to tell you about it. I figured I'd wait till the podcast.
Which one is that?
Have you seen the commercial for, I think it's Whirlpool, where they have the mom asking all the right questions?
Yes, it makes me cry. I'm a crier. I cry at everything, but yes, I'm just talking about it. You're gonna make me tear up here.
I love that commercial. I just think it's a really great example of totally connecting with your audience. And no, I'm not a mom or a stay-at-home mom, but my wife is, and she and I watched it together, and it's just, you just see yourself instantly in those questions.
Oh, definitely. With my son being a year and a half old and not quite talking yet, it really resonated with me. I understood the frustration that she was feeling. So
it just seems like a great example of applying a lot of what we've talked about here on the podcast with personas and customer journey, because it's kind of C-stage content that any mom can identify with, regardless of whether they're in the market for a washer or not, and tying it back to the brand. So I thought it was great.
Emotionally connected, which is always what we look for.
Exactly. So what are we talking about today?
Today we are talking about brand vectors.
And this is a concept that's probably foreign to most of our audience, since this is something that we've sort of cooked up here at Brilliant Metrics.
Well, I know what brand is, but what exactly is a brand vector?
So a brand vector is it's a tool that's used to visualize and measure your brand, but not just in one way. So we have brand awareness, which is commonly measured through surveys. You have aided and unaided awareness, and you're trying to understand if people are familiar with your brand name and maybe a component of what you stand for. A brand vector is measuring something very specific about your brand, one particular brand personality attribute or one particular market position. And it's figuring out where your brand sits on a continuum.
I like it because again, it's a tool for identifying your brand, which we're always looking for something that we can then apply to our brand and share with our teams. And I like it because rather than just saying that you're one thing, you're kind of giving the spectrum so you know exactly where you fall on that. Because it's one thing to say you're a free spirit, but exactly how free spirited are you? If you're showing that against the extreme of being stodgy and you're just a little bit above the midpoint, then yes, you're free spirit, but you're not so free spirit that you're totally out there and hard to, you know, hard for the general public to relate with. So it helps to really put that into perspective.
I think to help our audience visualize this, we kind of need to explain what a brand vector actually looks like. So, and I'm going to use my hands here, so I apologize if you're not watching us on video, but it's basically a line. And at the end of the line, you have two believable extremes. So on one end, you might have, as you said, stodgy, and on the other end, you might have free-spirited. And so you can picture the guy in a suit and tie with a vest sitting in a leather chair on one side, and you can picture the guy in sandals and shorts on the other side, right? And then you've got to figure out where does your brand sit between these two extremes, because you could have one that's all the way over in that stodgy guy in the leather chair, and you could have one, you know, barefoot and shorts on a beach, and a brand could have either personality, and you position your brand along that continuum.
For our listeners that might be having a hard time visualizing stodgy and free spirit, a couple other examples that you can go off of is, you know, cheap on one end and luxury on the other, and where you fall within that range kind of helps to build that perspective. Another option is exclusive versus inclusive.
And the key is that it's not just one line. You're not just plotting your brand on one of these lines. You're going to take multiple different vectors and figure out where you sit on each one in order to build a bigger, more vibrant picture of your brand and where it sits in the marketplace.
And I like it because it allows us to address some of the problems that we face when we're talking about brands, specifically that we can measure our brands quantitatively beyond aided and unaided awareness.
Yeah, it tracks back to an actual number. And so you can look at that number point in time. You can look at how that number changes over time and really get a feel for not only your position, but your momentum as well. It also helps to establish alignment because you're not just going to measure where senior leadership believes that the organization is. You're not just going to measure where the marketing department thinks the organization is. You're going to measure at a couple of different points. And so we often run brand vector surveys with the employees of the organization. We run them with the senior leadership. We run them also with existing customers. And then what we call near misses, those people who have been involved in the sales process at some point, but are not current customers. So they haven't had a chance to fully drink the Kool-Aid.
I love that we look at it in terms of both internal and external alignment, because I think so often when we do a brand audit, we're really focused on that external portion. You know, where's our brand identity? Where's our brand image? What's that gap? And it's almost always focused on the organization versus, you know, the customer or the outside external market. And we forget about the employees, but employees and the people who are living our brand every single day are so important to making our brand what it is, that this gives us a way to address that and audit that and see, are we in line? Where do we have opportunities to create better alignment?
Yeah, and ideally, if you're measuring all of these different points, you should end up with a very tight cluster of dots on this line. That never happens in real life, but
it's our goal. It's what we're striving for.
Exactly.
I think the other thing that you're able to do, and I love that we've incorporated, so not only do we have where our senior team sees us and where our employees see us and where our customers see us, but we throw in an extra dimension there and we throw in our competitors. We always want to know how we relate to our competitors. And this is very helpful when you're sitting down and really looking at your strategy and what differentiates you. This is a very easy visual way to look at that.
Yeah, absolutely. Because you want to make sure that you're differentiating from those competitors, but not just that you're differentiated, but how you're differentiated. So if you can figure out which components of your brand are most important, then you can figure out where, you know, how far away is your dot from your competitors' dots, because ideally it sits in its own little space, right?
Sure.
So I think this is a good point right here for us to take a quick break and talk about how we can help some people.
Before we continue, I'd like to take a quick moment to ask you Iterative Marketers a small but meaningful favor and ask that you give a few dollars to a charity that's important to one of our own. This week's charitable cause was sent in by Cat House of Budweiser in Hayden, Idaho. Cat asks that you make a contribution to the American Kidney Fund, the nation's leading nonprofit helping people fight kidney disease and live healthier lives. Learn more at kidneyfund.org or visit the link in the show notes. If you would like to submit your cause for consideration for our next podcast, please visit iterativemarketing.net/podcast and click the Share a Cause button. We love sharing causes that are important to you.
Okay, and we're back. So before the break, we talked about kind of what a brand vector is and how we use them. Let's break down the actual process of creating a brand vector. It starts with your senior leadership, because you have to engage your senior leadership and understand where they see the organization. And it's a great place to start because you immediately get buy-in from them on the project and they feel like they're part of it. Because if you throw this at them afterwards, it can usually cause a problem within the organization. So getting them engaged early, asking them where they put their dots, and then getting consensus there is usually one of the first steps.
I think the next place to go is take a look at your competitors. And this is a little trickier because for the sake of resources and time, you're not going to necessarily be running a full brand audit on your competitors. And so take your best guess as to where they fall on these different spectrums.
Yeah, and usually just a cursory view of their website, looking at some of their literature, you'll get a feel for where they are. And certainly your salespeople have encountered these folks in the field before, and you can always test your theories there. You don't have to get too in-depth.
another great resource when you're talking about your competitors as well is if you have a recent employee that has, you know, jumped ship from one of your competitors and is now working for you, they can provide some very valuable insights as well.
And I always check the career section of the competitor's website, because that's where they're really describing their culture, and that's really what's going to shine through in their brand anyway. So,
great idea.
The next step after you've got your competitors mapped is you're going to take a look and whittle down which vectors are most important, which ones really matter to your brand and your position within the marketplace.
I think this is the tricky part, and we're actually going to get into this in more depth in just a few minutes here. But really, you're, to Steve's point, you're really trying to find the ones that are most important and a manageable number that makes sense. Having 30 different vectors is not something that as a corporation or a company, you are going to be able to maintain.
And really, it becomes very important in the last step, and that is to actually do the measurement. And so now you're going to reach out to your employees, you're going to reach out to your customers, you're going to reach out to those near misses, those not quite customers, as well as resurvey the senior leadership to see where everybody puts their dots on that line so you can see how tight your groupings are.
Now, this was a pretty quick overview of what this process looks like. Obviously, there's some more information and some more depth that goes along with this, and we've got the full process outlined on the Iterative Marketing website, and there is a link in the show notes.
So let's break into that. The trickiest part of this process is usually picking which vectors are most important. I know that that's where we've gotten hung up in the past, and I imagine that's where our listeners are also going to get hung up. So how do we go about that?
So we're going to divide these into two sort of buckets. The first being brand vectors that are associated with our brand's personality, and the other half are going to be associated with our market position.
When you're picking your brand vectors, and we'll have a list, a tool out on the site of some of the stock ones that we start with, but we usually introduce some custom ones as well. The key is to identify the two believable extremes. And so to break that down, they're believable in that you could picture a brand taking this position. So you can't have a brand vector of evil versus good, because you're just not going to have a brand that chooses to be evil. It's not a valid brand vector. So they have to be believable on both sides. And then you also have to make sure that they are extreme, because if it's two kind of middle of the road positions, then you're not going to get a whole lot of value of having a position on one side or the other.
So when we take a look at brand personality, what's sort of the guiding force? What is it that we're trying to communicate with these brand vectors?
We're trying to take an emotional position. If you think about it, as a consumer, you don't put a whole lot of thought into the decisions that you make on a day-to-day basis. If you did, you'd spend hours and hours in the grocery store just to get through your list.
I still spend hours and hours at the grocery store to get to my list, but that's a whole nother story.
But in general, you make these snap decisions and you purchase things, and usually you're doing it with your gut. And it's funny, they've done studies on how, and I think I've mentioned this in past podcasts, but it bears repeating. They've done studies about how we make decisions, and they are entirely emotional. We actually backfill the rationale afterwards. Does that mean that we aren't using valid inputs, rational inputs to make those decisions? No, our emotional engines are taking what we know, what we've learned, and then in a complex computer, we can't see spitting out a decision. But a lot of that comes out of gut, and a lot of it comes out of what you know, like, and trust. And so if you think about who are your closest friends and why they're your closest friends and why you know them and like them and trust them, it comes from certain components of their personality that align with your own values. And that's why you choose to surround yourself with those people. It's no different with brands. And so when we look at selecting our brand vectors on the brand personality side, it's identifying where are those personality attributes that are going to make other people know your brand, like your brand, and trust your brand. They're either going to attract or repel.
So I think a few examples to kind of help make this a little bit more tangible. When we're talking about some of the brand personality vectors, we're looking at informal versus formal. Breaking that down, what's coming out in your communication style? What's coming out in the way that your employees are dressing, the way that your employees are interacting? This all falls within that spectrum, and where you are is going to be guided by each of those individual interactions.
Other examples are plain spoken, or using very fluffy language. You have other examples of corporate or entrepreneurial, things like classic or timeless, or are you always hip and trendy, you know, current trend, following the current trend in style. Those sorts of things are things that would either pull people in or push them away as brand attributes. What about market position? What are we looking for there?
So market position, a little bit, the emotion seems to come out of that, and it turns more into a rational decision process that the prospect is going through, and really ties into when you're looking at your competitors. What are the differences between them? What are you comparing between the competitors? And that's where these market position vectors come in.
And usually they're based on one of the three, you know, three fundamentals of market positioning, right? So better, faster, cheaper, pick two. It's the same kind of thing. Now, where you introduce some subtlety is, what does better mean for your industry? Does better mean that you are higher touch in your customer service? Does better mean that your product functions better? Does better mean that it's built from better materials? It depends on whether you're offering a product or a service and where your competitors hang their hats, and you know this for your industry. And the same thing is true of faster and cheaper, and what do those mean within the context of your product or service? Because cheaper on the surface might mean something entirely different from your product ends up costing your customer money in the beginning but ends up saving them significant money in the end.
Now, again, there's a lot of different ways that you can go with this. And as Steve mentioned, on the website, we've got some examples of some different vectors for both brand personality and market position. A couple of tips as you review that document and try and figure out what makes sense for your company. One, you want to pick the ones that you know are going to resonate with your customers. Why are your customers choosing you over the competition? The answer to that question is going to help you figure out which brand vectors are right for you.
Exactly. And you also want to make sure that you're picking brand vectors that position you off of the middle generally. And there are exceptions to that. I'll get that in a second. But usually you want to pick the vectors where you are on one of the two extremes. Because if you are positioned on one of the two extremes, those are the ones that push away the wrong fit customers and pull in the right fit customers, because it's something that they can identify with. It's hard to identify with blah. Now, the exception to that is the third thing you want to look at, and that's your competitive set. You can find that sometimes if all of your competitors are off on extremes, being in the middle might actually be a competitive advantage and might be a brand vector that you want to include, because now you have your competitors are repelling everybody at the two extremes, and you're being more inclusive and being able to pull people in that maybe don't identify with either end of the spectrum. So generally you want to be on the ends or closer to the ends for the brand vectors that you're going to focus on. The exception being, where do you differ from your competitors? Because that's the last component that you want to look at when you're picking which vectors you're going to run with.
Okay, so we've picked our vectors, we've run our studies, we've got all the data back. Now what do we do?
Well, now we need to take a look at our dots, and it's all a matter of interpreting dots on these spectrums. The first thing you want to look at is, how tight of a grouping do you have of these dots? How close together are they? Because if all the dots are in the same place, gold star. I mean, that's awesome, because that means that your team, your employees, are totally in line with your brand. They know who you are and they're acting it in the marketplace. That means that your senior leadership actually knows who they are, and your customers are following in suit. If they're not in alignment, then you have a problem.
Let me ask you this. You've done this once or twice. How often have you seen those dots in perfect alignment?
Very, very rarely. And it's a nice little win when they are. But usually one is off from the other two. And more often than not, it's senior leadership or the employees. One of them is usually in alignment with the customer.
And so what do you do at that point?
I like to liken this to, there's a fable or a story about a ship captain. The ship captain is sailing in the middle of the dark of night. There's no moon, and he sees a light dead ahead of his ship, right? And so he pulls out his radio and he radios out and he says, to the other ship, our bearing matches your bearing. You need to move, otherwise we're going to have a head-on collision. And the other ship says, no, you need to move, or we're going to have a head-on collision. And the captain says, I don't think you understand who I am. I am captain of the such and such ship. We're this huge ship and other ships move, not us. And the other person on the other end of the radio says, I don't think you understand who we are. We're a lighthouse.
I love that story, but I think it's a great example.
Yeah, it ties back to exactly what we're talking about here, because when you look at, okay, if your dots aren't all in alignment, it means that some dots need to move. And the dot that is your customers and your target audience, your near misses, that dot is the lighthouse, because that is the one that is going to be the hardest to move. It's going to cost the most money and the most resources.
But there are exceptions. There is an exception to when you may want to try to move that dot. And that is what you often refer to as an aspirational vector.
Yes. So brands don't have to be stagnant. If you are, you're not being responsive to the market. You're not being responsive to your competitors, and you're not carving that unique position. And so it is good and healthy to have one or two aspirational vectors where we are trying to influence our target market, that our brand is actually a little bit further out on that spectrum. And the key is to limit the number of times and places that you're trying to do that. Because if you try to do that in all vectors all at once, you're just going to confuse the audience about who you really are.
Well, and this really only works if you've got pretty tight alignment with your other dots. If you've got your senior team, your employees, and your customers all in the same general area, then you've got more room to go after this aspirational vector. But otherwise, you're sending a mixed message.
Absolutely, absolutely. So if you're not going to try and move the market, then that means that you have to move one of the other two dots. And so if you're moving senior leadership, now it's just a reset on expectations. And if you've got a good leadership team, they're going to see the data and they're going to realize, okay, we're not where we thought we were. This is where we actually are. And it's a matter of educating and informing based on the data from the survey. So that's one of the benefits of just doing this exercise to begin with. If it's your employees, well, now you've got to take a little bit more action, and you actually have to launch into some internal branding and take some actions to get your brand communicated and reinforced internally within the organization. We'll talk more about that next week under brand activation, because we believe that brand activation is as much internal as it is external. If you do want to move that dot externally, well, now you're doing a more traditional brand activation campaign or program, and getting your audience engaged with your brand in ways that are actually going to shift their perception and move them emotionally or logically to where you need them to be on that particular spectrum.
Another issue that has come up when we've run these in the past is that sometimes your dot isn't different than your competitors. And so when that's the case, what do you do? And I think it's important to note that if it's one dot, that's not really an issue. You know, you can't be different in every single area. You are going to see some overlap as you move within your market. So again, one dot, not really an issue. If you've got multiple dots that are kind of laying on top of each other, and especially if it's with the same competitor, then you've got to take a look at where you can possibly make a change or even an acquisition of your competitor's firm.
Yeah, that's a great example of where an acquisition might make sense. It could also mean just, you know, picking another vector, because maybe there's another vector that you didn't see as core to your brand, but one where there is differentiation. And so if you add another vector, and maybe, or more likely substitute a vector, because you're going to want to pull one out if you pull one in, then you have an opportunity to hang your hat on something that's a little bit different, and it'll drive the differentiation in that way. And that's just a matter of auditing your existing branding materials and shining a light on that way in which you are different.
So you mentioned auditing the existing materials, but one thing, you know, when we talk about brand is so much about perception. It's all about perception. And so how often should we be coming back and looking at our brand vectors to see if something's changed either in our leadership team, in our core values as a company, with how our employees are interacting, or even just with how our customers are perceiving us?
We generally recommend looking at this about once a year. Any more than that, and you have survey fatigue issues, and you haven't given enough time in between your measurement points for anything to really change, because it's not going to change overnight. but any less frequently, and you don't have the data you need on where you're at right now to be able to make educated decisions as you go to position within the marketplace or as you go to create collateral. Does that make sense?
It does.
Let's talk a bit about how brand vectors play a role in rebranding, and what have you seen there, Elizabeth?
This can be a very, very useful tool when it comes to rebranding because it allows us to focus on exactly what it is that we're trying to change what we're trying to change with the new brand and then how we're going to measure it moving forward. So it's a great place to start. Where you can potentially run into some issues and where I want to caution anyone who is going through a rebrand or considering a rebrand and is thinking about using brand vectors is that you really want to limit the number of vectors that you're trying to change. You know, in alignment with what we talk about all the time, part of our iterative marketing methodology is starting small. We really want to start small and again, limit the number of vectors that we're trying to change so that we have a better chance to see which ones are making an impact with our market. And also it allows us to better manage that change.
Yeah, the brand vector process gives you sort of an anchor that you can kind of tie all of your efforts in that rebranding effort to, is kind of how I like to look at it, because you're looking at each dimension separately so that you can see when we come out the other end of this rebrand, we expect that these dots are going to move like this. And that's it can be a very unifying way to get everybody on the same page as to what this rebrand means beyond just a newer, pretty, more modern logo, right? Because ultimately you want to do more than that.
Yeah, it's all about the feelings that are associated with that logo and the emotions that are attached to it.
I think we've done a pretty good job of laying this out. Like we said, there's more resources on the website that we will link to in the show notes. Next week we're going to talk about what, once you have these brand vectors and you've defined your brand off of this, how do you engage in a brand activation if it's appropriate? And I'm really looking forward to that conversation.
Me too. It's an exciting one. And I really like the employee side of it is just as important as the customer facing side.
In the meantime, I want to thank everyone for making time for us this week. And until next week, onward and upward.
If you haven't already, be sure to subscribe to the podcast on YouTube or your favorite podcast directory. If you want notes and links to resources discussed on the show, sign up to get them emailed to you each week at iterativemarketing.net. There, you'll also find the Iterative Marketing blog and our community LinkedIn group where you can share ideas and ask questions of your fellow iterative marketers. You can also follow us on Twitter. Our username is @iter8ive. Or email us at podcast@iterativemarketing.net. The Iterative Marketing Podcast is a production of Brilliant Metrics, a consultancy helping brands and agencies rid the world of marketing waste. Our producer is Heather Ullman with transcription assistance from Emily Bechtel. Our music is by Seastock Audio Music Production and Sound Design. You can check them out at seastockaudio.com. We'll see you next week. Until then, onward and upward.